Hello, and welcome to the Love Mia Vita podcast. I'm Jerry DiPiano, CEO of FemPharma. Thank you for joining me as we discuss all things women's health and wellness. Please note that this information is simply that. It's information to help you to think through your decisions. Please consult your medical practitioner to discuss your personal situation. Thank you. Hello, Dr. Juliana Hauser. This is one of my favorite guests, Dr. Juliana Hauser, who is a co-host with me. She's been a guest on the Love Mia Vita podcast quite often. And for those of you that haven't had the pleasure of getting to know her, just a brief intro, and Juliana, you'll fill in the gaps if I've missed something. So Dr. Juliana Hauser has a PhD in counseling education from the College of William and Mary. She is considered a sex expert, but so much more. She is seeing patients in her practice in Kentucky, and she also is available for telehealth visits if anyone is interested. But Juliana, did I miss anything here?
Oh, you did a great introduction. It's so good to be back. I feel like it's been a bit, so it's really nice to be able to have this conversation again with you. I'm twice licensed, so I have two licenses. Probably the only addition onto that, but it's great to be back, and it's, as always, I love the topics that you pick for us to dive into.
So, as an expert in the area of psychology and counseling education, it's always interesting to have these conversations around mental health or mental wellness, as we like to call it. And we talk a lot about sex, but the issues that are also related to sex include things like the mood disorders. And sadly, we know that especially in the case of major depressive disorder, depression in general, that unfortunately, women are disproportionately impacted by this. In fact, it starts as early as puberty. So you start to see these the increase in mood disorder called depression. It may be major depressive disorder if you get a clinical diagnosis, or maybe depressive symptoms, or it could be something called persistent depressive disorder. But you start to see this emerge in young girls starting at the age of 13, and then there becomes this fairly significant gender gap. So we tend to see twice as many girls and women as boys and men with these types of symptoms. And that can be due to a number of different factors. As women mature through their reproductive life cycle into their 20s, 30s, 40s, and beyond, we see different types of manifestations of that. Today, what we want to discuss is specifically how this is manifested in perimenopause and menopause. And clearly there's more work to be done, and that's the topic that we're going to cover today. So how do you know when you have a mood disorder in perimenopause, menopause? What should you do about it? And we're going to talk about Dr. Juliana's study.
Right. So, you know, we've been talking about this topic privately for quite some time, and I'm so grateful that it's a topic you're bringing to the forefront, because it's often one of the things that when I am speaking, when I'm asked to be interviewed, or I'm at a speaking event, particularly about perimenopause and menopause, it's rare that mental health is highlighted. It's rare that it is a topic in and of itself. Sometimes it is mentioned, but there's a specific thing that's typically mentioned, or it's a throwaway. There's an increase of anxiety and depression, and it's on a list of many things. And I find that to be extremely troubling. So that's my experience in the kind of outer world and in the speaking world of and, you know, content and understanding and teaching others. And then in my private practice, I see this on an individual basis, and also in relationships, that there is an enormous impact of mental health and perimenopause and menopause. A lot of times the conversation begins with, I don't feel like myself. That is a very commonly phrased thing. And And I have to discern, is that, do you mean physically, mentally? What do we mean by that? And often it's both. But oftentimes when that phrase is discussed out in the perimenopause and menopause world, it's discussed in the context of physically how we feel. And the mental aspect is either assumed not to be a part of it, or it isn't even asked about. And in the past few years, it's really been something that's bothered me, because I've had the privilege of hearing many, many, many stories, and that all of the stories involve some aspect of mental health being affected in this time period. And it's quite confusing for women, and those who love those with those who identify as women are be as what is this? What is this? What is the origin of it? What is the severity of this? And what is the treatment to get relief? And unfortunately, the answer really is we don't have enough research out there to have definitive research-based answers. And that really makes me angry. And we need all of that. We need to have the data with rigorous studies that really explains the difference between what's a pre-existing mental health issue, a pre-existing predisposition for this that is being brought on by puberty or hormonal fluctuations through our cycles and through our lifetime in this, what is absolutely related to perimenopause, what's absolutely related to menopause itself and postmenopause, and what can be done to bring relief to women and lessen the effects on them. We just don't have it. The statistics are abysmal. And I'm sure a lot of people have heard this is the statistic already of how few research is about women's health. Then you put perimenopause and menopause into that, the statistics go very low. You put mental health in perimenopause and menopause, and it's virtually non-existent, virtually.
It is very frightening, and it's something that we focus on a lot here at Fempharma because, as you know, we are, as a women's healthcare company, we've looked at diseases and disorders very differently than most of the industries. So when we look at diseases and disorders, we look at diseases that differently or disproportionately affect women. And that is because there's a dearth, as you said, there's a dearth of knowledge that exists with respect to some of these conditions. It could be, we call it the A to Z of women's healthcare: autoimmune diseases, Alzheimer's, different types of depression, forms of depression. And by the way, we tend to lump mood disorders of women into one bucket, which is the mood disorder of depression. But there's also borderline personality disorder. There's schizoaffective disorder, and there are drugs that are being prescribed to these women for which good data does not exist as it pertains to how women transition through their various life stages. And we have some suggestion that estrogen, progesterone, so the female sex hormones play a role in this. So we don't want to discount that. But the question is what and through which life stages is this most pronounced? So when we look at, we also look at the different life events that may increase the predisposition, if it doesn't already exist, or the exacerbation of symptoms if it's already present. So if you are a person who's already suffering from major depressive disorder, or more importantly, persistent, which means that you haven't had symptom abatement for an extended period of time, how does that manifest itself when you are in perimenopause and postmenopause? So maybe you can talk about some of the factors that you are aware of that impact women at the perimenopausal stage, besides the biological and biochemical changes that are going on.
So in perimenopause and going back to what does that exactly mean? I even think that there is still too much of a difference of how people define perimenopause and what age range that people think that we're talking about. When I do it, just to kind of do a general sense of it, my view of perimenopause is that once a woman is hitting 35, I start looking at where is she in hormonal fluctuations, and how has her life changed physically and in the context of her life, and how is her mental health? And some people think 35 is too young because if the average age of menopause is 51 and perimenopause is 10 years, it should be 41. But I see it earlier, and I think we should be educating ourselves earlier. And at the least, even if you technically are not in perimenopause, starting at 35 to understand your baselines of baseline, this is how my mental health is. Baseline, if you're having periods, how are your moods? What is your emotional wellness throughout your cycle, and a monthly cycle as well as a yearly cycle? I find that to be very important to just track it, so that when there are, and it's a when, not an if, when there are differences, then you have a place to begin and to understand that, so that you are creating not just how you relate to national data, but you have your own individual data that you are collecting along the way. So 35-year-olds, start doing it. Those who are past 35, then what we're looking at is, do you have moments that when you are, depending on where you are in your cycle too, that either if you're predictable, so it would sound things like PMS. Do you feel more weepy? Do you feel more anger? Do you feel more tired? Does everything seem harder or worse? Or is there nothing? Is there absolutely nothing that is a part of this? You want to understand this because although, again, as we said, and I won't keep using this caveat when I say research, but there's not enough research, and the research that's out there, I'm not sure is the most solid of research. There is a link in some research to how you emotionally respond to the hormonal fluctuations with your period or cycle that can mimic itself in perimenopause and then in menopause. I think my theory, and I don't have my own research to back this, but my anecdotal and paying attention to my clients is that I think there's a greater link between that data in menopause than there is in perimenopause. And my thought of that is that they're part of the biggest outlier in perimenopause is that, when you see the graphics of how you have this cycle, how it's supposed to be when you're having your period regularly, and then it's pretty cycle, it's pretty known when you're in menopause. But perimenopause is known for having these big spikes and big ups and downs, and nothing's predictable about it. I think that unpredictability, one, it makes it very hard to understand what your data points are, and then two, the difference of how your body is constantly readjusting. It doesn't know, oh, I've got a lot of this, oh, I have none of this, or I have a little of this, and how your brain is not doesn't know how to respond to these spikes and valleys. And so I think that time period in of itself has its own unique mental health issue and own unique way of interacting that presents itself physically and mentally that is different than where we are in menopause. So when I ask women in the perimenopause phases about their mental health, it's usually very different than those in menopause. And usually the biggest difference is a lot of unknown. Like, I don't know how to explain it. It doesn't kind of make sense to me. Or I'm not sure. I hear a lot. I don't know. I don't know. And I think some of that's lack of education, that we don't know these things. We don't know what to expect. And we've been dismissed so much in our mental health and our reactions to our hormones. And I think partly is it can be hard for some to understand the pattern they're going through because there is no pattern in it beyond it being unpredictable.
Well, it makes sense when you think about perimenopause and you look at what your life was like as a teenager going through puberty. And PMS, which is a milder form of some of the symptoms that women experience when they are about to cycle, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which is actually described in the DSM-5-TR, just the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that psychiatrists use, is considered a mood disorder. And it's a much more pronounced sensitivity to what's going on when you are cycling, right, during your menstrual cycle. So those women in perimenopause, if they have a similar sensitivity, because you said this, the fluctuations are pretty, can be pretty horrible. And so your body doesn't know how to reset. And hypothetically, it makes sense that those same women would be at increased risk for more severe perimenopausal symptoms that resemble depressive disorder, right? Whether it's persistent PDD or MDD, persistent depressive disorder, or a major depressive disorder. We also look at life events. And I know that in your survey, and Dr. Juliana has been fielding a survey now, more to come on that. But I note in your survey, you talk about, you ask questions about life events. Perhaps we can have you share a little bit more about the life events and the convergence of those life events with what's happening when a woman is in perimenopause. And you're right. It could be you start to experience some of these changes in your mid-30s. Median age for perimenopause is around 47, but that doesn't, that's not an absolute. Some women are younger, some women are older, some women.
So, life events, and it's hard to stick to a list because people's lives vary so much, and the stressors that women go over at 35 can be very different than at 49. And 35-year-olds, a group of 35-year-olds can have a whole lot of different stressors in it. But in general, and from again, like my informally through my practice and my speaking, as well as more formally in this survey, what I'm finding is that the kind of the top parts of where women are describing that their mental health intersects life events is raising children is really difficult. That a lot of people think that. The young child aspect is the quote the worst, and they're so happy that they're through the toddler phase or the kids are now in school, and so like woo, we did it, we did the worst of it. All those of us who have older kids are like, oh, you don't even know. That realization often is happening at this time. Like, oh, it doesn't necessarily get easier. It just what gets hard is different. And the problems can get bigger, or they have multiple children at this point doing multiple things. And if you are in a partnership or, in a marriage with a person and you have children, you now have, we'll say if you have two kids and a partner, you now have four people that are living a life and are trying to figure themselves out and figure out the family union. And you are in the phase of life of everyone's humming along, and we have individual needs that can conflict and individual rates of self-awareness and behavioral changes. And we're trying to shower and grocery shop and be self-evolved and intersect that with everything else outside of the home. It's very difficult. So family life is number one. And some would pull out if they're married or in a partnership that the marriage can often be at a vulnerable place. It's not like in a sailing through place. And if you're not partnered, this is often a time period where someone is having like their a divorce. This is a kind of like a pretty popular time that people are like, yeah, this marriage isn't for me. So now they're dealing with single parenthood and learning what that is like. And that is its own stressor, divorce, and learning how to co-parent after divorce too. And for some, they have teenagers. That's a its whole animal. When I meet somebody's in perimenopause and has someone going through puberty or menopause and going have someone going through puberty, it's just, oh, bless this household. That's a whole lot to be navigating and going through. And then if someone works outside the home, there's career. And this is often a time where your career is humming and that you feel like, especially, and I'll just say in your 40s, that you are really setting the basis for what your retirement's going to be, or like where are you meaning the pinnacle of your career. This is the setting of the stage. This is the sprint aspect. And that in of itself, if it's going well, is stressful. And if it's not going well, that is stressful. You can add political on my survey because it's timely right now. The second biggest stressor is government and politics. So it's just not a surprise with how things are happening in America right now. And if I had done this survey a couple of years ago, I don't think that would have been as high up. It's family with marriage and kids, and then it's government and politics is number two. But I think that's an outlier for the times. And then others, it's taking care of parents, that being in a sandwich generation. And then it is the outside stress of like career and finances. And when we bring the context of life into mental health, I'm always, and I appreciate you saying this earlier too. So we have to be careful as women how we position those things as well, how we position speaking about our emotional wellness surrounding our periods and our hormonal changes that can be used as a weapon and very dismissive and also minimize the importance of it happening, just quote, I'm putting in quotations for those who aren't looking, just because it's hormones that we have that positioning that we have to really be careful of. But the same thing in the context, just because it makes sense that this is a hard time of life, or you're going through a stressful divorce, or you have a kid going through puberty and a teenager, that's a context that adds to the reasoning as to why. It doesn't account for how hard and how important it is to get these things under control. So it is not to be misunderstood as like, oh, well, yeah. I mean, it's part of the process. You can't avoid it. I disagree with that, and I think that mentality has actually caused a lot of severity and lack of treatment and suffering in mental health. There are lots of things that should be preemptively done because we know this is happening in most people's life stage, and a lot of times people wait until they're already in a crisis.
And that's a really important point. So dismissing these what are symptoms that you might attribute to, oh, well, you're going through, perimenopause, or you are postmenopausal, because we know menopause, once you have not had a period for 12 months, you are in menopause, but the next day you're in postmenopause, right? But attributing that solely and exclusively to what's going on with your hormones just doesn't negate the fact that you're experiencing symptoms that may need to be addressed. I'd like to, because many women, as you stated earlier in this conversation, don't recognize those symptoms, or they think, okay, I'm just going to deal with this because this is the way my mother went through menopause, or my grandmother, or my friend, or my sister. It could be more significant and more severe, and there could be some additional underlying causes. So we've talked about the behavioral, the social, the cultural, the family issues that, take place during these years. But we also, there could be neurological issues. There could be more pronounced physiological concerns that should be addressed. So let's perhaps talk about some of these symptoms.
So there, I mean, the list of what ha can happen to your body in perimenopause and menopause is quite big. The most commonly cited one is 31 symptoms. And there in those symptoms, there's like three or four that you could put under mental health, and the rest is more physiologic. And I think there's still some confusion as to what is mental health and mental wellness, is anything that has to do with brain fog and concentration, does that fall under mental health or not? And in my opinion, it is absolutely related. And I think all of the symptoms are related to mental illness or mental health and mental wellness, because how we feel and interact and cope with how our body is changing is a mental wellness factor. So even if, let's say, what your main symptom is a disruption in your sleep, that could be listed under physiologic. It is affecting your mental health because we know sleep changes the way that we handle our moods. It can change our hormonal, our cortisol. There's just so many things that are affecting how our mental health is experienced and expressed. And we're tired and we don't have as much bandwidth to handle things that we normally would because we're sleep deprived. So it falls under mental health as a cause and effect.
And I'm going to just stop you there because actually it's the one area where if you have that vasomotor symptom of like say a hot flash which causes sleep interruption, where you can actually get some relief with either with something that addresses those hot flashes, whether it's a natural product or whether it is a hormonal product, that is the one area where it's crystal clear that it may help with some of your symptoms, your de what is considered a depressive symptom.
Exactly. It's so in looking at what those symptoms are, I think the first thing that you should look for in yourself, or if you love someone who is in this time frame, it is that phrasing or that concern, something seems different. Something seems different. I want to give one example that I was told recently, and that was someone who I would describe as a very docile and very just kind of lighthearted, easygoing personality. And I've known her for many years, and she is in perimenopause, and she described a road rage experience that she had that internally was just infuriated by this driver and like fantasized about ramming them and was like screaming in her car, and then was like, what was that? And absolutely didn't understand what had happened. And she's got tons of life stressors. There are lots that quote would have made sense, but the intensity of it and her feeling like this isn't like me. If you have anything, and that's could be seen as an extreme example, although I hear lots of stories like that, is if something feels like an outlier, if something feels different, and I encourage everyone to not put the excuse of that there's life stressors. What we're looking at this time period is, yes, life stressors make sense, but if you feel different in how you experience it or express your interaction with those life stressors, that's a symptom. And I think that it's very often unrecognized, and that we look at it as, oh, I didn't sleep. Oh, yes, I'm having problems in my marriage. Yes, my boss sucks. All those things are true. And also, if you experience yourself with them differently, then that's a symptom. Also, some of the symptoms that I look at is that there is there are the few studies that exist, and then already in mine, I'm seeing there's an absolute increase in experiencing anxiety for the first time, depression for the first time, and an increase if you already had pre-existing anxiety and pre-existing depression, that there is often an increase that you experience. It is the data for my study so far has been a varied in perimenopause, but very clear in menopause. And that makes sense for what we talked about previously. I would say that in my survey, although it's not complete, what I'm finding is that women will often describe anger, depression, and anxiety, and then anything that has to ha that could fall under the cluster of ADHD symptoms. So brain fog, brain concentration, hard finding words, hard starting things, hard finishing things. And not feeling on top of things. I can't tell you how many women in my private practice who are in their 50s and above who are saying, like, I don't want anyone at work to understand that it is harder for me to do this. It's harder for me to do that. I'm having to cover for it. So now I'm having to work harder to do what I normally would do. I'm having to hide it from my assistant for other people so they don't know this. And I'm freaking out. I am freaking out. I don't know. Is this early onset Alzheimer's? Is there anything that's going to cure this? And how bad is this going to get? And I'm one of the few people they will tell because they are so afraid of anyone else finding this out. And I have to admit, it worries me to even say these things publicly because I don't want it to be positioned as a weapon against women and to be viewed as one more thing that make it difficult for women to be working or around or for women to be blamed for. That's not the context of this information being public. What it is that we need to understand, it is a part of this process that needs to be addressed, and we've got to have effective treatments because women shouldn't suffer like this, should not suffer. And if it's something that you're experiencing, even though where I'm telling you to go, there isn't tons out there. There isn't zero that can make a difference. There are things that can be done, and if you have a good provider And I think the team is someone who understands hormonal replacement therapy, somebody who looks at you holistically, a good therapist, and if psychotropic medicine is issued, a really good perimenopause and menopause informed psychiatrist. It is very hard to have a team like that. It's very hard, unfortunately, but it's a must, and it's where I would put priority of things. And also, one of the things that I've asked in this study is, has anyone told you that they're worried about you? Has anyone said that you seem different? And the percentage is very high. And I find that to be very concerning.
Yeah, we talk about, you mentioned finding the right provider, and there's a new area of medicine called gynecology. That area really is the convergence of specific providers who are trained to look at the brain and hormones and biological function. And that is a really important area. So yes, if you can find one of those providers that really understands women at every age, because they would need to understand what has happened through your life transition, starting with puberty. We talked about individuals that love you and care about you that are observing these kinds of changes. And obviously, there are, more serious consequences to some of these, what are called depressive symptoms. We don't necessarily want to trigger anyone, but that really is the reason to take control of this, because we know that there is help. We know that there are opportunities, whether you use pharmacology or you use a combination of psychotropics, as Dr. Juliana said, or you use a combination of those with cognitive behavioral therapy. All of that may make a difference. And you're right, this is not a disability. When I have these conversations about menopause, and we've all heard about menopause in the workplace, menopause in the family. I don't want women to come away thinking, oh, this is a disability. I have to be treated differently. We need to be treated equitably with a recognition that these are some health challenges, no different than if you had a cardiometabolic issue that needed a statin, right? That's what we're talking about. There's an opportunity to regain your wellness. The way in which you regain that is going to be different, but it shouldn't be viewed as a disability. Oh, well, we can't hire her because she's going to have a hot flash and she's going to turn the temperature down in her office, or she's probably not going to remember this the minute after I say, we have 5 minutes to finish the Zoom. She forgot to turn off her camera, right? So those are the sorts of things that we're not talking about here. What we're talking about is the thing that women deserve the most, which is recognition of their symptoms, understanding of how they present themselves, and the ability of the provider. And I think that's the third leg of the stool, right? So providers need to not be dismissive of these women. And that means if you're a woman that doesn't have a gynecologist, but you're seeing a primary care practitioner, that primary care practitioner needs to be attentive to what's going on. And if she is not capable of helping you, then you need to find someone else.
Yes. And each of those statements, I could talk for an hour about each of those points that you just made. They're well put, Jerry. And I agree with you. I'll start with the last one, is the provider. And a lot of people know this already, but in medical school, as well as therapists in training, we've said a lot before, they're not given any, and we are not given any training in sexuality. And same with menopause, perimenopause, and menopause. Now, that is everywhere. It's not considered something that is important to even have a mention in one lecture, let alone a class. And it should be a whole class. It should be for medical school and for therapists. So knowing that you are, there's no way that you have a plethora of providers who are highly educated in this, and we have a hard time with healthcare, that the intersection is like the perfect storm to find somebody who is highly educated in this, knows what they're doing, is up on the research, and is willing to be flexible with what your individual needs are, is it's really difficult to find. But it is out there, and you just have to keep advocating, and hopefully you have the ability, financially and time-wise and resource-wise, to find somebody who knows it. So I always ask, what is your training and your viewpoint about perimenopause and menopause when I'm looking for myself? And then I talk to my clients and I teach them to say those things too, is the first thing. I don't even bother having an appointment if they can't answer it. And I want to know their philosophy. So being educated isn't just the only thing you need to know. You need to know what their philosophy is. My opinion is that I want to hear somebody that says that they look at it holistically and that they're going to look at my case and give me my options, and we're going to come up with something together. That's my preferred way to experience a therapist, psychotropic, and medical. And I will not personally work with somebody or partner with somebody for a client if I don't hear those kinds of words, because I know the work, the hurdles that we're going to have to overcome just to get treatment, is just, we don't have time for that. So those are the things in the ideal way that you're looking for. And then it is about having patience and understanding the process. In as a therapist, and as when I work with psychiatrists, I understand when someone's coming to me for the first time, getting on anti-anxiety, antidepressant, or any kind of mood disorder, and ADHD, I am it we I we, I have to have the conversation. We may get it right the first time, but it's often going to take us some time. There's some medicine that it takes months for it to kick in, so that we even know if it's the right medicine or the right dosage. And when you're struggling and when you're really in a significant peril, it's awful to hear we have to wait 3 months to have an appointment and to find out if it's okay. And yet that's how it is. Some is immediate. It's some you know yes or no pretty quickly, but some you don't. And there's just some trickiness. I'll give an example with someone coming in and saying symptoms that are I can't clean my house like I used to. I can't finish projects like I used to. I can't concentrate anymore. I feel really impulsive. My emotions are really big. All of those cluster under a diagnosis that would make sense for ADHD, or ADD. And yet, when I hear her age is anywhere in the perimenopause and menopause phase, I want to also understand where she is hormonally. And I want her, because I don't prescribe medicine, I want her to be working with somebody who is very well versed as to like what is this adult onset, because there can be trauma can make a big difference in someone's life, especially, and people can get onset late adulthood or adulthood onset of these symptoms. And so a traditional ADHD medicine would make sense for that. But if it's more hormonal and it's more in the realm of this being a hormonally changing event, then we need to have something that's looking at that as well, because some of the worst experiences that I've had in observing my clients is they feel like it's anxiety, depression, or ADHD. They go, a psychiatrist gives them medicine that fits what would normally be for anti-anxiety, antidepressant, and for ADHD symptoms, and it doesn't work at all. It doesn't work. Now there's more despondency, more anxiety, more depression, and there is a lot of fear as to, can nothing help me now? Is this what I'm sentenced to for the rest of my life? And that goes back to why we need more research, why we need more understanding about what's happening, and then what are treatments that are going to help that. I also want to say back to, about what this means for women. I haven't figured out exactly the right metaphor yet that feels right. So I'm going to give you a metaphor that I use currently, but I don't necessarily love it. And I'm open for the ones that feel right, but this is what I'm using currently, which is when you're in perimenopause and menopause, I think I like to look at yourself as the process of coming a caterpillar to a butterfly. In the perimenopause phase, it is the shedding of who you are as a caterpillar. It's the mushiness that everything goes into. It's the everything that's happening in the chrysalis that is pretty wild. It's an active transition. And when you are moving into the menopause phase of things, you have transitioned out of that cocoon, and you are now into this new body, this new presentation. And we would never look at the butterfly and be like, wow, you are in deficit and this is a problem. But we would say, well, you can't crawl because you don't have the legs you used to. So, but great that you've got these wings. Beautiful. And look at you being able to do all of that. We wouldn't look at it as a deficit. We would look at it as a transition, and it would be a whole body transition that we now have to look at. That being is very different. It's not a caterpillar anymore. It's a butterfly. And I think what we're doing in perimenopause and menopause is we are saying to the butterfly, why aren't you a caterpillar? Get me back to the caterpillar. And I think that is a mistake, even for our mental health, to be looking at that. We should be like, oh, okay, you have begun. But we are going to take care of you in this because this is valid. It is happening with or without you, and you need support. You need that. And I'm looking for our society to look at the caterpillar and its chrysalis when a woman's going through perimenopause as like, ah, this is indication we need to give you different support. And let's see in a more excited way instead of this doom and gloom way of like, oh, your life's about to be in the shitter right now. It is like, it's just an indication here's where we are. And you need this and you deserve this. And we're gonna be a tribe around your chrysalis and protect you. We don't have protection right now. We don't have people saying that this is okay. And we don't have people clapping when the butterfly comes out because it's hard earned to get out of that shell into the butterfly. And I think that we as women need to be looking at it that way for ourselves and for each other. We need work policies that are protecting that. We need politics and government that are protecting us in that way. And as we know, that's unlikely to be happening easily. So we need to be doing it ourselves. And I know when that, because I had a hysterectomy, so my chrysalis was fast. I did not have a very long period between the two. When I got that in my head of like, oh, I'm not trying to go back to who I was and how I used to be. I have a brand new body. I need to get to know this body, and I need to have a team around me that sees my new body, my new being, and likes it, thinks there's so much amazingness there, and please give me the chance to use my wings instead of seeing it as something that I'm really held back and clipped.
That's a great metaphor. I will tell you, and you haven't heard, you didn't hear this before, that I was interviewed recently, and someone asked me how I would describe menopause, and I said it's a renaissance.
Ah,
So it's
yeah.
a rebirth. So renaissance, a rebirth, because you are born into it. It's a totally different phase of life, but it is an exciting new phase of life when you can shed. So, using your metaphor of the butterfly, you can shed your old self. And a lot of the things about your old self may have been great, but the next phase can be even better because think about all the things that you've learned, right? If you've had a career, then maybe you've shed that career for the next phase where you can do things that you really love to do. That where you have purpose. So lots of ways to think about this as a rebirth, a renaissance, emerging as the butterfly. I love that image. It's beautiful. So we're probably coming up on the time when we need to let our guests know that there's going to be a part two to this
Perfect.
podcast because there's so much to describe to you about what can be done, what should be done, and what the research that Dr. Juliana is conducting is beginning to reveal to us. On that note, Juliana, women who are interested in participating in your study, so if you're a woman who'd like to help Dr. Juliana and to some degree Femme Pharma because we're partnering with her, if you'd like to participate, that would really help us to gain more understanding around what is going on in your life. All will be kept anonymous, but you could really help us. Dr. Juliana, how may our guests reach you?
So we have a dedicated page on my website which is dr-juliana.com with one M. You'll have this in your show notes, the link to it as well. And it's on my social media also. The survey is phase one of this research. And my goal is to have 1,000 women fill this out. And you do not have to identify as having a quote mental health issue in perimenopause and menopause in order to fill it out. You need to be in perimenopause or menopause in order to fill it out. And then you just answer the questions as to as what feels correct for you and not. There's a mixture of like multiple choice that you just pick it. And there's places where you can tell stories or longer aspects to it that you're writing. It takes about 15 minutes to fill out. And here's my urge, and I am saying this is my urge and my pleading to all that are listening is please do this for all of us. There is not any research out there that is asking these kinds of questions in this comprehensive way. And this is phase one. We need to, I'm so tired of getting up and saying this sentence, which is there's not enough women's healthcare research happening. And it is not going to happen now unless women are doing it for ourselves. This is free. And I'm donating my time. You are too in this process. And we have to have representation of people's voices in order to get this data to get to the next phase of things. The other thing is that I am also bound determined to have this not be just a survey of white women. This has to have full representation and diversity in it. And I'm asking for any women of color to please fill this out also, and please put this to everyone's community. So if it makes sense for you, then do it for you, send it to if your mother is alive to her, to if you have sisters, your friends, co-workers, pass this along. And what I have found is if you specifically target 5 to 10 people and say, please fill out this survey, that's how it gets done more than just in a blanketed aspect. You need to, and know that if you fill this out, you are helping yourself and the next generation as well. No one's coming for this to do this for us. It has to be us doing it. And I would love to be able to say that women stood up for themselves and said that mental health matter. And I want to leave it with this. And I am so grateful that perimenopause and menopause is in a very different phase of the conversation in social media, in our conversations, and the tips and the treatments, the options that we have out there. I am so incredibly grateful that we live in an era where we have these options compared to the generation ahead of us. But if we're not alive because we haven't taken care of our mental health, then the tips that are so popular right now that matter a lot will not matter at all. We have to be alive for us to have what we're knowing about menopause matter. And mental health and menopause should be the headline, not the side note. And a study like this will help make that matter.
And as a last point, for any woman that would like to share her story, please feel free to reach out to Dr. Juliana Hauser. She shared with you her website, or email us at MiaVita, MiaVita, at fempharma.com. And the two of us, will be more than happy. You can do it anonymously if you choose. We'd love to hear your story. And we care about you. And diversity, equity, and inclusion matters. It matters, especially in women's health research. So thank you, Dr. Juliana Hauser. We look forward to part two. And for those listening, please be well and love MiaVita. Thank you for joining us on the Love MiaVita podcast. Love MiaVita means love my life, and that is a mantra we should all live by. Please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and check out our website at fempharma.com. Remember to live well and love MiaVita.